Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The following is a transcription of Edgar Hogarth's final patient interview. Edgar was interned at St. Dionysus for most of the 20th century, and the following was recorded 3 months before his passing in early 2001. The first time I interviewed, the first I went into knowing everything he said was, well, I'll let you determine. You have a right to know, though. You all do. Geraldine was right about that, at least. His is a story much like every other resident of that ghastly place, that great rug under which we've swept so much over the decades. I thought we were doing good work by hiding them away, but it's not making a difference. There will be a special place in hell reserved for us, for keeping the stories of Edgar and his like buried from the world, buried from themselves. That we let them suffer the delusion of being delusional. I'm choosing to make his words public now because, well, it won't matter much soon, will it?
Dr. Dipesh Anand. Transcription starts. All words, unless noted otherwise, are from Edgar Hogarth. Ipset Witness Class, POI, number 4820.
Do you ever dream? Let your mind wander. Go where it may as you trundle through life. I used to sit without tapping complex rhythms on my wrist to keep focused, would you believe? I could walk down a corridor without listening to every detail, could keep without being drugged into chemical unconsciousness. I was not born this way, despite what you've heard. My habits, quirks, and tics aren't some mental impairment. I lived the first third of my life in complete normalcy. Nothing about my character was exceptional, and nothing about my life was unique. This was how I liked it. It took less than 24 hours for all of that to change. I woke up a free man one day, the next a prisoner, to a fear that at any moment I'd turn a corner without concentrating and end up.
Edgar pauses until time 4:37 before continuing.
The day in question was a Sunday, the Lord's Day. The irony wasn't lost on me, even during the weeks that followed. That confusing time when my darling Ava and Dr. Monterey tried to nurse me out of witless vacancy. It was sunny, too. Good weather always had a positive effect on my temperament. I remember because I was whistling throughout my walk from the village. It was an absent-minded, improvised tune that became more disjointed and erratic the closer I got to.
Edgar pauses for 2 minutes and 17 seconds.
Well, perhaps it would be better if I recounted from the beginning. Not for your sake, but mine. I find I must ease myself into thinking about it, lest the flashbacks return and I suffer another attack of temporary insanity. I would like to get through a day without losing hours to one of my troubled spells. Like everything else in the time before, the morning of that Sunday was unremarkable. It hadn't yet been an hour since Pastor Henry had finished morning mass. The echoing clangs of the church bells thundering across the countryside, shaking birds from trees and babes from their slumber. The men of the village had gone to drink, the women to cook meals and wash children, the gaggle of old croons still lingering on the green, discussing curtain-twitch gossip. My darling Ava had headed home to prepare lunch. My sister and her husband, both of whom I miss dearly, were joining us that afternoon. Ava had been excited. She found a new pork stock recipe in one of my mother's old almanacs. At least I think it was pork, although looking back it's perhaps could have been beef. That's by the by, though. The only reason it's even worth mentioning is that the dinner plans had me walking Penelope earlier than I usually would. This in itself was not an inconvenience. My jaunts about Farmer John's field with a young golden retriever were a welcome reprieve from the prying eyes and sanctimonious chitter-chatter of the village. The walks provided a chance to get lost in my thoughts, and a welcome chance at that. The factory, the village, our friends and neighbors, all were noisy to be around. Intrusive. No. Only when walking Penelope could I turn around from the world for a while to reflect, muse, and ponder. With news of war on the continent reaching our rural ears that morning, I had a great deal for my mind to untangle. I was more focused on thoughts of Germany than I was on my route. As such, I can't tell you when, never mind give a specific where, I took a detour. I didn't notice we'd left the familiarity of the cabbages and scarecrows until Penelope began to whine. It took the high-pitched sounds of canine distress to pull me off from my thoughts and realize the path we walked was not unfamiliar. Before she agreed to send me here, my darling Ava scoured Farmer John's fields and the surrounding lands. Unfortunately, she found no road or path matching the one I am about to describe. I swear to you, though, it was real.
Edgar pauses for 1 minute and 35 seconds, sound of sobbing present throughout.
It is real. I wish that nothing I am about to describe was factual, but the scars I acquired that day weren't only on my physique. I walked away with wounds which more than proved my lucidity. It's just a shame the quacks and charlatans you've paraded in front of me over the years value their books and science more than sense and reason. Bastards. But yes, Penelope's whimpers struck through my absent-mindedness like lightning. Despite the fact I was not sleeping, to say I awoke with a start, as though I had been roused from a deep slumber with a potful of boiled water to the face, would be an accurate observation. Her distress was contagious. I felt my stomach drop before my eyes had registered the alien nature of our surroundings. The scarecrows, miles of neglected fences, and plumes of smoke from hamlets scattered across the distant hills and vanished. All were absent from my view to the horizon in every direction, a phenomenon unheard of anywhere near the village. The fields surrounding the paths weren't green anymore. They'd become a color I did not recognize. I would describe it as a golden brown, were it not for the fact that the long reeds seemed to grow grayer the longer I gaped. The shape of this landscape was also new. The countryside I knew was hilly, rolly, rough in depth and texture. Farmer John would often be heard complaining about his bloody legs, damn it, after marching his flocks up and down the slopes all day. I'd spend many hours in the crow's feet, listening to him rant at poor Susan the barmaid about how unfair it is that he upstairs saw fit to place so many buggering hills all over this bloody land. The him upstairs Farmer John regularly made crude reference to must have lacked inspiration when creating this new place. The sepia fields were flat, flat like the earth itself had been precisely measured and planned by an architect. From where we stood, all the way to the horizon, no elevation or decline could be observed. No distant mountains or bludging hillocks could be found, no matter which way I frantically turned. The sea of reeds stretched further than I'd ever seen a landscape unfurl. The skyline was too far away, almost as though the earth I was standing on had no curve. It makes me uneasy picturing it in my head, even now. Penelope hadn't stopped whimpering. The sound caused me no end of distress, and I have no shame in telling you that I wanted nothing more than for her to stop that endless, grinding whine. Still, I did not attempt to shush or scold her. I would have you call me anything but a hypocrite, and I too felt the fear. It was a deep dread, a primal foreboding from back when we walked as apes. I can't give this sensation a description that would do it justice. I feel it is an emotion you can only truly empathize when if you experienced it for yourself. Both Penelope and I knew with as much certainty as I knew the sun rose in the morning and sets at night, that we were somewhere safe for no living thing.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
My decision to turn and first walk at a brisk pace, then break out into a jog, then full-on sprint back the way we came, wasn't conscious. My only thought was that I had to return to the village, that I had to leave this unfamiliar world as soon as possible. I thought we'd been running at least 2 hours before I realized our predicament couldn't be solved by backtracking and hope. Penelope and I only left the village some 30 minutes prior to losing ourselves in the endless fields of graying reeds. We should have found home on our marathon several times over. As it was, the unfamiliar dirt track always extended further than I could run, farther than where the village should have been, stretching endlessly onward no matter how much my feet blistered or my thighs burned. By the second hour of running, I had no choice but to collapse. I lay on my side in the dirt, tongue sticking to the roof of my mouth, each breath raw and painful. Penelope threw herself down next to me in a similar state, her rhythmic panting still spaced between whimpers. It was at this point, when I was laying on the ground, waiting for my screaming body to recover, that I noticed the sky.
Edgar pauses for 1 minute, 38 seconds.
Do you have a cigarette?
Interviewer interjects.
Yeah, of course.
Edgar pauses for 4 minutes and 37 seconds. Edgar coughs.
I'd been so absorbed by panic I hadn't paid the sky above much attention. The purple-orange hues had been hiding something. Something I had to stare at for a good few minutes to uncover. Faint patterns, almost imperceptible, filled every inch of it. They weren't clouds, though. They were ridges and bumps, bevels and impressions, chaotic patterns all somehow hewn from the colors of the horizon itself. A tapestried ceiling of unnatural intricacy, like the atmosphere had been carved into by some vast, otherworldly creature. I lay on my back and watched them march their slow march across the stratosphere. I tried to convince myself they were a trick of the light, or a solar phenomena like the aurora borealis. I'm sure it's no surprise by now, but this did me no good. The longer I watched, the clearer the forms in the translucent entropy became. Within about 30 seconds, I could make out individual shapes, shapes that it worried me to note were distractingly humanoid. By the time a minute had passed, I had no doubts. They were people. Somewhere, my mind knew they weren't merely the illusion of people, or an impression or likeness of them, but actual people. People somehow trapped behind a veil that stretched the width and breadth of the heavens above me. I could make out the details with ease, flailing limbs, bodies writhing over one another. Faces twisted and contorted into expressions of unimaginable pain.
Edgar pauses for 27 seconds.
I realize how much of a madman this makes me sound, hearing myself say it out loud. I wish I was. This is the thing, you see. I could hear them. I can hear them, still. Every time I close my eyes without sedatives.
Edgar pauses for 1 minute, 28 seconds.
They were quiet at first, but the unholy choir was soon loud enough to dispel any myth of hallucination. It didn't take long for my ears to ring. I'm sure if I hadn't looked away, the drums would have burst. Such a sound I cannot put into words, nor do I want to. I shudder, contemplating its mere existence, if I'm being brutally honest with you. And it does exist. The fact I was found with dried blood spreading from my ears in all directions is proof. This is what I mean about quacks and charlatans. If it was a hallucination from some flight of insanity, why, when the screams return to my nightmares, does every physical examination show extensive and continuous damage to my inner ears the next morning?
Interviewer interjects.
Please, calm down, Edgar.
Edgar sighs audibly.
Anyway, it didn't take long for the dream to return. I'm not ashamed to admit I was in full-blown hysterics by this point. But even in my frantic state, I was able to work out that heading back to the village wasn't an option. Thankfully, that noise from above stopped the instant I looked away from the seething mass of bodies in the sky. Fear of its return kept my gaze anchored to the dirt beneath my feet. My ears throbbed as I walked. Penelope's whimpering, the crunch of dry earth, the rustling of a wind I couldn't feel through leaves of trees that weren't there. All seemed louder, piercing, uncomfortable even. Every sound, no matter how small, felt intrusive in the silent void left once the noise had dissipated. I found myself almost attempting to look up again, just to fill that nauseating abyss. I forgot about the noise soon enough, though.
Interviewer interjects.
Why? Because I found the gate.
Edgar pauses for 5 minutes and 59 seconds.
I had barely been walking back on myself for a quarter hour when I bumped into it. Had I been looking forward, I'd have seen it coming. As it was, the threat of catching an accidental glimpse of the mass of wraiths above meant I wasn't looking where I was going. I crashed into the bars at full speed, head first. The clang, when I bounced off them, echoed across the fields. Landing on my ass, I yelled both from pain and surprise. It only took a few moments for my skull to throb, and I'm told the bruise on my brow was visible. It was a metal gate, one of those wrought iron things you usually find outside manor houses. Well, not iron, but it was wrought something. The metal was polished. The bars gleamed, reflecting light from a sun or moon which did not exist outside of their mirror-like surfaces. I think I would have noticed the absence of both beforehand, but I'd been either unable or unwilling to process the information. There was no wall or fence to speak of. The gleaming frame stood connected to a single, equally gleaming post. But other than that, stood alone in the endless fields. It waited for me to stand and pat the dust and earth from my coat before swinging open. The movement was smooth. Too smooth, silent and fluid, like no hinge I had seen before or, thankfully, since. I could feel myself trembling. My extremities were both numb and tingling. And were it not for her whimpers, I'd have been unaware of Penelope trying to bury her head in my knees. I only continued onward because I knew going back was futile. Every fiber of my being urged me not to walk through that gleaming archway, but what choice did I have? The fact I encountered the gate going forward a much shorter distance than I had retreated wasn't lost on me. I was too drunk on dread to heed it much, though. I think the tree was manipulating my emotions as well as my senses by that point. The fear had almost enveloped into a desire, no, a compulsion to continue, if only to get my inevitable fate over with. The dissonance was migraine-inducing. I was both being beckoned down that dirt track and repelled by the fear of meeting whatever awaited at its end. I'd never be a believer in the supernatural. My weekly attendance of Pastor Henry's sermons had been, at best, an adherence to social norms. Truth be told, the faith in the belief part, the faith in the divine and all that, had always eluded me somewhat. It didn't now. For the first time in my life, my prayers, muttered hastily under my breath as I trudged on, were honest and heartfelt. I had long since abandoned any attempt to provide a rational explanation for my fate. Never one for nihilism. The only conclusion left to me at the time was that I had somehow fallen prey to the work of the devil. Do I believe that now? I'm not so sure. Even Satan and hell are part of God's design, but I cannot bring myself...
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway, because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
...of to believe that the being who created my darling Ava could also be responsible for what waited at the end of that dry dirt road.
Edgar pauses for 8 minutes and 29 seconds.
Do you have another cigarette? Actually, just leave the box.
Edgar pauses for 7 minutes and 33 seconds. Sound of man sobbing. Sound of cigarettes being smoked.
Sorry, Dr. Anand.
Interviewer interjects.
It's fine, Edgar. Please, continue. The hill sneaked up on me. Seems illogical, but the phrasing is deliberate. I wish I could provide a more satisfactory explanation. It was always there. I just didn't know it was until it decided I needed to. In my memories, I can see it at the end of the path quite clearly, present from the moment I stepped through the gate. However, on the day, it were as though it were behind a veil or shimmer. Somehow, it hid not just from my vision, but my whole awareness, choosing to reveal itself without warning with a sudden enough drop of the curtain to give Penelope cause to bark. The hill emerged from the swaying monochrome reeds as though it were the head of some aberration from the ocean depths, breaching the waves for air. A thing which had no right being on the surface, yet was there anyway. It wasn't a large hill. The incline was short and shallow. The peak of the mound no further than 20 feet from the base. Yet, I still found myself having to squint to make out the form at the top. It was a tree. One would think a tree was an instantly recognizable form, but there I was, perplexed and baffled. I strained my eyes, fighting to decipher the silhouetted trunk and branches, almost as though they were words written in a language I only knew half the alphabet of. Unlike the mass of specters in the sky, the tree I couldn't look away from. Its shadowy branches ebbed and swayed on the winds I could hear but not feel. Leaves that didn't exist rustling harshly. Penelope was barking nonstop, panicked yaps that echoed over the grating of the foliage. I told her to be quiet with a bark of my own. I don't know why. It was hypocritical of me when you consider all I wanted to do was scream. I loved that dog. It causes me no end of despair, knowing that the last words she heard from her master were a harsh and unwanted reprimand. She was still cowering at my heels as I walked around the circumference of the fat, gnarled trunk. She'd always been an obedient companion, and so had somehow managed to find silence. I could feel her shaking, though, the trembles so violent she nearly tripped me over on several occasions. I'm glad I didn't look down to meet her eyes. This might seem an odd thing to say, but I have enough nightmares without adding what the terror in her canine face must have looked like. Closer to the tree, I could make out details and features of the wood. Rigid bark, like an oak or pine, covered its surface. Although the scales were thicker and darker than any species of tree I knew or now know of. And believe me, my research on the subject since that day had been extensive, despite the library here being woefully inadequate. Around the base of the trunk, where the jagged roots cut and thrust into dry dirt, there were bare patches where the thick scales had frayed or weathered away entirely. The exposed flesh was waxy. I use the word flesh because, whilst it definitely was wood, it looked more fibrous and malleable than it had any right being. I hope it was just a trick of my eyes, but it seemed like the bark shell contained a mass of human hair, matted tight and held together by a viscous sap. The smell was foul, too. It felt as though it were eating the skin from my nostrils. A munitions factory had recently opened near the village. Grenades. The lingering stench of the chlorine for the trenches is the closest comparison I have to the sap odor. Chlorine that had somehow gone rotten, if such a thing were even possible. I heard Penelope vomit, and to this day, thank the Lord I'm not blessed with the sensitive nose of a canine. The burning, itchy vapors were repulsive enough to make me almost forget the dread. Nausea and disgust became the new reasons for the retching in my gut. My darling Ava's eggs-on-toast breakfast threatening to return with each second spent inspecting the ochre liquid oozing from the fine strands. Thankfully, I never reached the point of actual sickness. Long before the moment came, I had found my way to the tree's other side. If you're up to date with my file, you'll understand why what I found rendered all other concerns moot. Only when viewed from the other side of the hill did the tree reveal its true form. The web of branches sprang from a thick appendage jutting out the reeking trunk. The majority stemmed from the bulbous knot where bark-covered limb and tree body connected, spreading in erratic patterns like veins on a tumor. The crook of the disjointed central limb stood a full 12 feet from the ground, bending overhead to form a half-arch not visible from the gate. The tip was a fresh wound, a clean and precise slice that left more exposed sap flesh. I did not have time to think much of this, however. What I found swinging on the end of the rope, emerging from it, required my full attention. I say that the rope emerged from the end of the branch, rather than was tied to or around it, because I could see no knots or binding of any kind. Even in my memories, and they are regrettably clear, perhaps even more so than my senses were as the event unfolded, I can't see how that damp, sticky twine held fast. It came forth from the sap and pus of the branch end, dangling from the clotting hairs as though it were fused to them. No, made from them. My instincts were telling me to run, trying to scream louder than the alien throbbing sensation that pulled me forward. The reason my senses left me, the thing that caused me to ignore the dread and give in to the enticing beckons of these vascular branches, was the other end of the frayed cord. It was wrapped around the neck of a child. She was a scrap of a thing, filthy and naked. Couldn't have been older than 8 or 9. She was thrashing and struggling against the tree's grip, kicking out at the empty air as her tiny hands wrestled with the rope around her throat. It takes a man colder than I could comprehend to ignore a child in such distress. The bulbous, bulging veins in her eyes, the slickness of tears on reddening cheeks, the pleading screams through choked gasps. At the time, I did not understand why Penelope did not share my unignorable compulsion to save this child. The canine, instead, leapt between me and the struggling girl. I didn't scold her verbally for her barking this time. Instead, I just...
Edgar pauses for 4 minutes and 43 seconds.
Sorry. I still carry so much guilt. I've always been a gentleman, especially with animals. I even used to wince whenever I'd see a rider whip his horse. The thoughts that the hands I used to have...
Edgar pauses for 6 minutes and 29 seconds. Sound of a single sob.
I can remember my knuckles stinging. Her confused cry as she rolled sideways down the mound, the trail of wet redness and stray teeth left on the dirt. What I did was so against my basic nature that it repulsed me. In that moment, I thought the only thing that I knew, the only thought that existed to me, was rescue the flailing innocent from the clutches of the noose. In all honesty, I think my fanatical devotion was so strong I would have done the same, even if it were my darling, Ava. Such was the lure of the girl's decision.
The new McCrispy strip is here. Dip approved by ketchup, tangy barbecue, honey mustard, Sprite, McFlurry, Big Mac sauce, double dipped in buffalo and ranch, more ranch, and creamy chili McCrispy strip dip. Now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Stress. She tried to reach out to me as I approached. The weight of her skinny frame must have been too much for her other arm to bear alone. Her head snapped back to pull at the mucus-coated rope almost as soon as it thrust at me. I could feel why as I tried to lift her and remove the strangling pull of gravity. The child, this wafer-thin thing caked in dirt and dried blood, weighed almost as much as I did. No mean feat, even though old age and institutionalization hadn't been kind to my waistline. I think we can both tell my history includes more than my share of fine ale and good living. My legs buckled under the unexpected strain, forcing me down onto one knee. I felt something besides fear. It was confusion. This shock from one too many inexplicable phenomena that ironically gave me clarity to see through the urge to save this innocent creature and realize it was, well, the only word I have for it is wrong. The skin that wasn't obscured by mud or scab was too smooth, too flawless. The coloring was the tone of no known ethnicity. A canary yellow with a tinge of green so subtle one almost didn't notice it, as though an infected wound festered beneath every inch of translucent flesh. The girl's movements, the flailing and tugging, felt stiff and rehearsed. A performance. The chaos of a human soul clutching to life was not present. In fact, now... the strange succubus effect had been broken. The struggles seemed almost lackluster. The eyes were too disconcerting to ignore. With my new perspective, I realized that any contact her gaze had with my own was pure coincidence. Her pupils did not follow me as I fell. They remained locked on the space where I'd stood, staring into the too distant horizon. Still... motionless, empty of any spark or brightness. As though it had read my thoughts, the thing pretending to be a girl stopped moving. It didn't fall limp, but went stiff enough to convince any onlooker rigor mortis was beginning to set in. Each of its scrawny limbs shot straight down, going so rigid that the knees and elbows started bending in on themselves. I said something. I can't remember the exact words, but I do remember I screamed them. I also remember they were aimed at a god I knew was not present. The tree
seemed to respond to me. Matted hair whipped through the air as the girl thing's head snapped back, neck bent at an unnatural angle, throat now revealed. My screams grew louder. I was past the point of anything intelligible passing through my lips. My terror rendered coherent speech impossible. The girl thing's face was lowered, her concealed organic features found on no human or creature of the land or sea. The rope was no rope at all. Muscular sinew attached the child lure to the branch, unwinding from an open orifice just above the center of the collarbone. This wet hole leaked the same putrid sap as the tree, the strings of tendon emerging from its dripping as they split and circulated to form the noose knot. A slit ran up the neck, all the way from the orifice to the base of the chin. There was a hard, organic noise, not too dissimilar from wet wood being snapped in two. The vertical folds parted. Muscles writhed and bulged in the thing's throat. The jaw cracked in half and splayed itself. Bone was forced apart to allow this new opening to stretch to its full width, and I now knew why the gaze of the girl thing was so lifeless. It looked upon me with its true eye for the first time. The yellow and vein-covered orb sat where vocal cords should have been, pulsing in a socket formed from collarbone and broken jaw. Its pupil, a dinner plate-sized circle black as gunpowder, bore through me, and I knew, in that instant, that I knelt before a being as malevolent as it was superior. My screaming was continuous. I could hear it, the endless shrill distress, even over the thumping of blood in my ears. Intermittent flashes of pain leapt from my chest, my heart smashing into my ribcage, stomach knotted into my diaphragm, lungs raw. I howled, both from terror and agony. The sound reaching my ears, though loud, came as though from some miles away. My mind had removed itself from my senses by this point. I've met men who served in the war, the ones driven mad by the trenches, who understand what I mean by this. So far, they're the only ones. Shell shock, they call it. Stepping out of yourself, too overwhelmed by the horror of your surroundings to do anything but watch from afar. The sounds of a second organic crack reached me as the bones shifted to make way for another inhuman orifice. This fresh divide had been obscured by the dirt and dry blood, the latter of which I realized I would soon add to. The edges of it puckered like a flower unveiling itself at dawn. The seam of the split undid itself slowly, separating the child's body into two halves, dividing vertically from the base of the ribs down. The mustard gas smell was overpowering now. My eyes watered, and I felt a warm trickling from one of my nostrils. The distance between the segments grew wider as the putrid skin unzipped, the flesh of the lips curling outwards all the way. It was obvious they were lips because of what lay behind them. Teeth. Rows and rows of teeth. Human molars, to be specific. An army of them, filling the unholy maw, as though it belonged to a perverse species of shark. Where a spine should have dangled, a long tongue writhed and thrashed in the manner of an eel on the deck of a fisherman's boat. Fully unfurled, the spasming muscle ran to 6 feet in length at least. Ulcerations and abscesses covered its surface, saliva flying in all directions as it heaved and pulsated. Everywhere on the grotesque form, wet noises began to burst forth from the rope opening. The tendon connecting the thing to the tree started growing, revealing more of itself somehow. Thick wads of sap dripped down the cyclopean nightmare's cleaved torso, from the sphincter at its throat. More and more sinew unfurled as the abomination lowered itself to my level. I wanted to scramble backwards. I wanted to run. I wanted to be back home, sat by the warm fire, listening to my darling Ava recounting the village gossip of the day. I lacked the power to make any of this happen. All I could do was scream and raise my hands, watching as the thing descended upon me. The abnormal jaw was fully open, the concentric rows of molar poised beside me, ready to close. I could smell the burning of its breath, close enough for the repugnant tongue to prod and probe my colorless face. I lie there, helpless, hands above me in a futile gesture of self-preservation. The tree's eye drilled into me. Both I and it both knew I was doomed. Then, in the final moments, when its tongue lay behind to wrap around my left arm, a golden bolt struck the space between us. Penelope smashed into the thing before I'd registered the sounds of her defiant barks. The tree and I had been too focused on each other to notice her bound back up the hill and leap, her thoughts only on the fact that her master was in danger. The wolf in her knew only one strategy: go for the throat. Her jaws locked around the child thing's eyes, her body hanging between rows of teeth as she twisted and thrashed, determined not to stop until the threats of her world was dead. The abyssal creep.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Sure, and I moved in unison. For my part, I reached up to grab Penelope. My own thoughts now as much on keeping her safe from the nightmare as hers were on me. My fingers just about reached around her hind legs when the behemoth maw slammed shut. The golden retriever howled. I joined her. Penelope, along with my forearms and hands, were crushed to flatness before my brain could register the aberration had even moved. It took the warmth of flecks of blood splashing into my open mouth to notice that its mandibles were no longer apart. Only when I toppled onto my back was I aware of the sudden absence of feeling where my hands used to be. It was Penelope's scream, the piercing pain and confusion in that almost human sound, as her severed hindquarters landed at my feet, that made everything fall into place. This new shock kick-started muscles previously paralyzed by incomprehensible terror. Somehow, I ran. There was no pain from my severed wrists as I pelted down the hill. I flew through the gate. I could hear more organic sounds over my feet pounding the dirt, but I couldn't bring myself to look back to watch Penelope be consumed. I was beyond the ability to mourn her loss. The drive to keep running, to get as far away from the tree as possible, was too great. All I could do was run until the pain from open wounds and aching legs took over. I didn't know how long I had been running for before I collapsed, but it felt like hours, maybe even days. The last thing I remember, as I fell to the earth, vision fading to black, is the sight of the hill, still mere feet behind me. The tree as close as it had ever been.
Edgar pauses for 5 minutes and 32 seconds.
By the time I regained consciousness, the stumps where hands had once been were fully healed. My darling Ava said it had taken the village a whole night of searching to find me. And when they had, I was face down in a ditch some 20 miles away, babbling incoherent nonsense. I was covered in blood, both my own and Penelope's, but I didn't appear fresh despite my absence from the world I knew being brief. As you have probably guessed, it didn't take long from the first time I recounted my tale for the village to declare me mad. I was home for less than a month before they called your people, and you brought me to this shithole.
Interviewer interjects.
Relax, Edgar. I've read your file. Can you tell me about the eyewitness accounts?
Of course I can. They never found any traces of Penelope. This fact, rather than lend credits to my story, only served to fuel the rumor that I had killed and eaten her. To this day, I've yet to hear a reasonable explanation of how I managed to crush and remove both my hands, nor why the blood on my clothing appeared weeks, maybe even months, old. I suppose people are so desperate to cling to their feeble notions of normalcy that they're willing to ignore the truth even when provided with hard evidence. Even my darling Ava, despite her claims to the contrary, looked upon me with that familiar combination of pity and disbelief I have grown used to seeing in other people's faces. A mental breakdown, they called it, a sudden madness. Were it not for one final detail, I would have almost believed them. For, you see, when they found me, there was something wrapped around my arm. Some of them claimed it was the remains of a snake I'd bitten the head off of. Others that it was the only remains of Penelope's entrails. More still, that it was a dried vine or reed that proved I'd hidden her body in a river somewhere. All the rumors agreed on one thing, though, that the length of flesh was covered in ulcers and sores, and that it gave off the same reeking odor that you could smell by the munitions factory outside the village.
Edgar pauses for 2 minutes and 38 seconds. The sound of chair scraping. Interviewer interjects.
Is that it, Edgar? You sure there's nothing else you can remember?
Why?
Interviewer interjects.
Well, if, hypothetically, I'd spoken to someone who'd witnessed the same thing you did,
then I'd say you spend too much time around nutters, Dr. Anand. Thanks for lighting the cigarettes.
End of transcription.